is the Pedestrian Podcast.
I don't know. That's just what pedestrian, average, mediocre receivers do. What's up? What's up? My man Deion Sanders, we all right, huh? We all right? Yeah, we all right. We're going to go to the Super Bowl again, being all right.
The official podcast of the UK Seahawkers.
We are going to follow you. Gotcha, you lead us, gotcha, okay? Like I told you before, you lead us to darkness, we will follow you.
Here are your hosts, Stuart Court.
I'm probably wrong. I am wrong on a hell of a lot of things.
And Adam Nathan.
And I think if that's the philosophy you have going into every game, more often than not, if you score more points, you'll win.
Go Hawks.
We are still standing, and this 2019 Seattle Seahawks season is still going on. Welcome to another episode of the Pedestrian Podcast, the official UK Seahawkers podcast. The Seahawks survive for another week and move on to being just two stops away from one of the more remarkable runs in recent NFL history. To discuss all that and look ahead to this week's game in cold Wisconsin, joining myself, Stuart Court, is the man who spends his weekends watching the Belgian barrier, but also didn't really want to record, but allowed me to do so, Mr. Adam Nathan. How are we, sir?
I'm very well, thank you. You spent all that time writing that intro. I was expecting something a little bit better than that.
No, I didn't.
But you're all right.
But as soon as I saw that idiot on Sky Sports say the Belgian barrier, I was like, okay, that's how I'm going to...
That works. That works.
Bring in the show. Obviously, the Seahawks went to Philadelphia on Sunday evening, and after, what, three games of carnage and nonsense, the Seahawks game was the most serene one of the lot. And for the second time in the 2019 season, the Seahawks went to Philadelphia and won 17-9, Adam.
I thought it was very classy of the Seahawks after three ridiculously crazy, exciting playoff games that, you know, everyone has to go to bed. So it's nice that the Seahawks bored everyone into submission with their nice little 17-9 win that no one's ever going to remember because it was just dull as shit. But hey, I'll take dull and winning any day of the week in the playoffs. So it was fine by me. It did feel like the game was approximately 18 hours long, though.
Yeah, I mean, there's people, apparently, there's a few people in the Facebook group, there's a couple of people on Twitter as well, I saw in all up in the mentions of the BBC NFL show for the lack of coverage, lack of chat they had around the Seahawks game. But as I put on the Facebook group, it was effectively the quality of the last game of Match of the Day on Saturday night, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, there were three games that you could spend an hour talking about alone. So why would you waste time on that just like snooze fest? I mean, let's be honest. People are very sensitive about that. I don't really understand why. Like, who cares? We won.
Yeah, that's all that matters at the end of the day. Obviously, the main guy, well, there's a couple of main talking points, main praise-worthy people. But I'm going to put it this way. Russell Wilson's performance, is it just me that it seems to be better in post-mortem than it was actually living through it, Adam?
Yeah, you kind of forget how many just like ridiculous throws he made off his back foot, going to one side, going to the other side, hitting DK Metcalf. He's had a really weird season in the sense that the stats don't really show kind of the impact he's had. But I think he accounted for like 90. I think he accounted for the most yards percentage wise of any quarterback in a playoff game history. I think that might be right.
Yeah, the Seahawks got 382 yards, and Russell Wilson accounted for 363 of them.
So I mean, that's a lot.
Yeah, quite. Yeah, that is a hefty amount. I'm not good at maths or percentages, so I'm not going to try and work that one. But yeah, it does kind of seem like we've said already that it wasn't much. It wasn't a classic. It was, if anything, it was duller than the first time around in Philadelphia. But it was kind of, it was like Alistair Corp has been tweeting up a storm the last few days, just showing example after example after example of how just in mind-boggling, how the hell did he manage this? And but Russell Wilson went in like the like echo chamber of the watching the game. It was more praising, how did Tyler catch that? How did Metcalf do this? When really it was RW3 getting the ball to those guys, wasn't it?
I mean, we were in a position whereby with Wentz going down and McCown coming in and us having a bit of a lead, like the only really important thing was to not give them the ball in a scorable position. You know, if we did, as long as we didn't turn the ball over, it was very, very unlikely we weren't going to win the game. So, you know, people will slate, you know, Carroll or whatever for rushing and not being adventurous enough. But I kind of thought they played it in exactly the right way, because as much, even if when the Eagles did get close, like on the Trey Flowers pass interference or whatever, they didn't really have enough to beat us. So the only thing that really mattered was we didn't beat ourselves. So yeah. I thought the game just kind of, the game was ruined on both sides really by Wentz's injury, because it made the Seahawks game plan infinitely easier, because there was nothing really to play against apart from yourselves.
Yeah, but as a few have pointed out on social media, Josh McCown looked better than Carson Wentz. That may be because the game plan wasn't aimed at him, maybe.
He's never going to make like a 25-yard run that Wentz could do, and he's never going to make like a laser beam throw that Wentz could do. Like, I feel like Wentz's career is a highs and lows like guy. He's not, yeah, he's been really good and very consistent in the last four or five games, but he is a guy capable of really high highs and much higher than McCown would be. So I don't think you can legislate for that, because Wentz could easily pull two touchdowns out of his ass without you even realizing they were going on.
Yeah, I think the McCown emergence in that game on Sunday kind of helped him just concentrate on stopping the two running backs. Like you said, him getting the ball consistently to his guys was probably let this slide. But I mean, he nearly led a 96-yard touchdown drive against the Seahawks defense, which they were all hooting and hollering after the game and said about not giving a touchdown, but they were pretty damn close to giving up a touchdown, a 96-yard drive to a 40-year-old quarterback who's been playing for like half the league at this point. But yeah, it wasn't all. I think second time this season that the backup quarterback has come into a road game. Obviously, we saw Mason Rudolph back in week two when Roethlisberger did his elbow in, that Rudolph looked better, and look how weird that looked 6-7 weeks later. But yeah, I think McCown looked better, but obviously the Wentz appearance was brief enough that it's probably easy to forget that, yeah, it kind of changed more than it didn't. But obviously Wilson, 18-33-25, the touchdown to the man of the moment, the man of the hour, who had a pretty much a dream second game in Philadelphia. Adam, DK Metcalf, 9 targets, 7 catches, 160 yards, and that long touchdown, 53 yards. And obviously then had the game icing completion against that beautiful cover zero that Jim Schwartz threw at Russell Wilson late in the fourth quarter. But it was a coming out party of all coming out parties, wasn't it, for DK Metcalf?
It was exactly that. I mean, it was... If DK Metcalf goes on to be a Hall of Fame receiver, or just a guy that plays in the league for 10 years or whatever, everyone will immediately think back to that day in Philadelphia when he like turned into a true pro. The way he's played over the course of the year, it wouldn't stun me if he went 0-3 against the Packers, because he has shown like an erraticism that I guess comes with a rookie. But yeah, it was an amazing performance, and one of those that if he can sustain makes his draft position look like an absolute laughing stock, to be honest.
Yeah, it does. But he kind of showed everything. I mean, the thing with the final play on, well, the final meaningful play on Sunday was he was on the right side of the field. I mean, it's not just that, it's the trust that the quarterback is clearly showing. And to be fair to Russell Wilson and DK Metcalf, it's been there since pretty much the first snap of the season, hasn't it, with these two?
Yeah, and even like that is obviously important, but he also put on a massive block for the David Moore run that set up Marshawn Lynch's touchdown. And you know how it goes as a Seahawks wide receiver. That will mean as much to Carroll as catching a 55-yard touchdown pass.
Yeah. I mean, it was a Swiss Army knife of a performance. As I say, it was a pretty... dream of a day for Decalin Adam.
I can't believe that's his name.
It is his name.
I thought you were, I don't know, I thought it was like an acronym or something you'd put on, or like a word that I'd never heard of. Decalin.
D, smaller E, uppercase K, A-Y-L-I-N.
This sounds like one of those Jordan Peele or whatever his name is things, because I mean, okay, well.
Yeah.
I'm not going to tell him he's got
No. I mean, I was sitting there watching the game with my mom on Sunday, and they showed the picture of him in there. Was his 2% body fat? He goes, "Is that him?" I was like, "Yep." He's 22 years old, mother.
What a life he must have.
Yeah, I know. I mean, imagine walking around looking like that. I mean, yeah. Anyway, Tyler Lockett also had a couple of the toe drag swag or toe tap swag on the sideline was impressive. But you said last week it would be important and interesting if we got him involved early, and he did that at only end of the day with 4 catches for 62 after the Metcalf mauling. But Tyler Lockett came up big in the big moments again, but also that early involvement kind of seemed to spark the offense to get ahead and stay ahead, didn't it?
Yeah, very much so. It was a very Baldwin-y type performance of, you know, making the big plays when you needed to, a real safety blanket, and getting involved early in the game was good to see. And he's getting healthier and healthier. So hopefully against the Packers on Sunday, who I think are the team that have given up the second most 40-yard pass plays in the league, we've got a nice double threat going into that.
Yep. I mean, that defense is strange, the Packers. We're getting that into in a second. Also, the Hall of Fame career of David Moore jumped back on track with just two catches, 57 yards. But a lot of that was white AC, Adam, which was interesting to see. But also, every time David Moore has done things this season, it's when he's got the ball in space and we had to do things after the catch. It he's shown more to his game in the very limited opportunities he's been given this year, hasn't he?
Which is interesting, because I don't recall that being something that we commented on much last year at all. It was the touchdowns he was catching were deep balls, like against Detroit and against the Panthers, that were just like, you know, catching them either in the end zone or just outside. So it's a great thing if he can add that to his game, because, you know, if we can have a slot receiver like that, that, you know, I've been talking about, you know, your Deebo Samuel styles, your Calvin Ridley style of guys, it'd be awesome to have a player like that come through.
Yeah, I mean, it's... I mean, there is a good thing. We talked all about Tyler Lockett jumping up in the absence of Doug Baldwin. Maybe that David Moore kind of role is maybe why we've seen next to nothing of the 25-year-old rookie John Ursa, right? Because that was kind of always going to be Doug Baldwin. He's got his rookie year number and everything. But David Moore seems to be that guy in space, which Doug Baldwin, again, was really, really good at this juncture of his career, winning before he had to make that next step kind of thing. Is that fair?
Yeah, 100%. That's very, very well put.
Yeah, but one offense thing which didn't go so well, minus Russell Wilson rush attempts, Travis Homer and Marshawn Lynch especially for Homer, a eye-opening performance in Week 17. They combined for 17 carries and just 19 yards, Adam. They seem to be running into a brick wall, and the Eagles weirdly kind of force the Seahawks to put the game and the ball in the offense's best players' hands, Adam. But it wasn't great from the running game on Sunday, which is kind of the opposite of how it's been for large swathes of this 2019 season, isn't it?
It wasn't, but Fletcher Cox, you know, is allowed to play like that, and he was insane, and he took away kind of anything in the A gaps that you could even think about. And look, credit to them, because this time last year it was exactly the same thing in Dallas. Dallas completely took the run away, but the Seahawks persisted and persisted and persisted with it until it was too late and they lost the game. At least this time you feel like the Seahawks realized what the issue was and dealt with it. And I think that made fair play to them for not making the same mistakes of a year before and coming out with a win maybe as a result.
Yeah, I mean, these running back box scores are hilarious. Travis Homer had 11 carries for 12 yards and the longest of 12. And Marshawn Lynch had 6 rushes for 7 yards and the long of 5. But again, Adam, second week running, someone tweeted that Marshawn Lynch in about 18 carries in 2 weeks has more rushing touchdowns than CJ Prosos has in 4 years. But we had our beast mode moment in a different way this week, Adam.
Well, this was proper beast mode. This was staying on your feet when you look like you're about to go down. Great little push from DJ Fluka. I mean, that was an exciting, like, exhilarating run. I was off the sofa when that happened, I have to say.
Yeah, it was a both arms in the air moment. I mean, I think there's a sound effect for Russell Wilson. There's that playoff beast mode, which is exactly what it is. And obviously, it's 9 years today when we're recording that the Beast Quake one happened against the New Orleans Saints, which is pretty cool. And that was kind of the 33-year-old version of that from 5 yards. Also, the 2011 or 2012 against the Eagles on Thursday night when he kind of kept his legs churning, running for 34 yards against the Eagles in Seattle. I can't remember what year that was, but it's kind of similar.
That time.
Pushed off. Up front, though, it was... I mean, the left side was George Fant and Jamarco Jones, and that's probably the first time we've mentioned them since we said, oh, the starting left side is George Fant and Jamarco Jones, because, I mean, the run game did do a lot, but those egregious worrying, oh, is Russell Wilson going to get up plays, didn't happen on Sunday, and when they did, it wasn't coming from that left side, was it? They played pretty damn well for a college basketball player who's played tight end this year, and a sixth round pick playing in his fourth NFL game. It was pretty impressive and pretty encouraging moving forward if Dwayne Brown and Michael Iupati can't go this week, isn't it, Adam?
Yeah, I mean, my extraordinarily untrained eye has always been quite impressed with Jamarco Jones as a guard. He looked outmatched as a tackle a few weeks ago against Arizona, but as a guard on the right or the left side, I think he's done really well. You couldn't ask much more than him, And yeah, Fant again did. Fant looks like he improves every time he plays at left tackle. Again, I'm hardly, Brian Balding are breaking these plays down with any vague amount of knowledge. I'm just going on what I see. But Fant doesn't seem to kill you at left tackle in the same way that, you know, I'm trying to think of the reams of tackles we've had before Dwayne Brown that were just massacring you every time we played. The offensive line MO has always been don't be shit as long as you've got Russell Wilson. You're not shit, you'll probably win. And they weren't shit, and so they won.
It's kind of weird how we've got two guys on Sonny Jones and Fluker, and one seems pretty adept. I think Pete Carroll mentioned it on Sunday night, maybe Monday morning, that Jamarco Jones did really well in pass protection. Then you got DJ Fluker, who is somewhat of a swinging door in pass protection, but as we saw in the Lynch run, he's a beast in the run game. It'll be interesting if they can ever find some sort of middle ground, because then this could really... That interior three we spoke about quite a bit could be set. This could be set fair. This the O line will be spoken about less and less, you'd hope, Adam.
Yeah, you're gonna need Joey Hunt to be bigger than he was on Sunday, unfortunately. Like that, if you want any semblance of an interior run game to happen, Joey Hunt can't be getting manhandled and mauled like he did. And I feel like he's in most games. I mean, maybe it was a Fletcher Cox issue, but in most games he's had a couple of bad plays in amongst generally okay stuff, whereas on Sunday he just looked outmatched for the duration, and that is a slight concern for me.
Defensively, Adam, obviously McCown asterisk looming large. I think Pete Carroll summed everything up on Monday when he was asked who stood out on defense. He just said two words, Adam. He said Jadeveon Clowney, because if that's what he looks like with an injury, oh boy. He only had five tackles, he had two for a loss, hit the quarterback once, which must be the hit which knocked Wentz out. But he was absolutely everywhere. And again, with Clowney, as has been the case more often than not, he maybe not be piling up the stats, but he was helping his guy next to him pile up the stats by just blowing up play after play after play. Wasn't it? It was impressive on Sunday.
Yeah, he was great. And fair play to him. You could argue that he's playing for his next contract. Yeah. But he could very easily not be playing these games, given he's a free agent and he has an injury that is clearly significant. I really appreciate it's a stupid word, as a professional sportsman. I think fair play to him that he is playing, because a lot of other players, I would imagine, would have just sat this out and said no thanks.
Yeah, I mean, there's things come out, not sure from where, but that he was unhappy with his usage and snap count against the Cardinals in week 17. He goes, if you're going to dress me, play me. And just clearly what they did on Sunday, and it was to the benefit of the team. Behind them, Cody Martin, Adam, we spoke last week, we kind of wanted to see more. Pete Carroll said he got a few things wrong, but Zach Ertz had half a body out there. Dallas Goedert was not that much of a presence with McCown, but Cody Barton flashed in numerous ways, numerous encouraging, exciting ways, looking ahead to not just the rest of this playoff run, but 2020 and onwards Seahawks defense. And Nkadim, he was covering tight ends. He was covering Miles Sanders and his weird route running. But he was properly impressive on Sunday.
Yeah, I thought he played well. And again, he's just a player that, as long as he didn't kill you, you'd be really happy with what he was doing. There were a lot of people that I listened to on the radio were, you know, pretty down on his potential performance. So I was, you know, really impressed with how he played. I don't think you could ask for an awful lot more than that.
No. And then behind them, Quandre Diggs was back, and that freed up to Bradley McDougal to just cause chaos. He led the team with 11 tackles on Sunday. And that defensive backfield is sturdier with Quandre Diggs, and it's not even funny how much freer and more impactful McDougal's been when Quandre's been next to him, is it?
Yeah, I didn't realise quite how much of a difference that was going to make to McDougal as much as anything, but it really was an incredible difference that he made. And it just opened up so much more for Bradley to kind of do the sort of like, almost like the Derwin James type role, like Derwin James light role that he's been, just like a free defender doing kind of whatever he wants in and amongst there with the safety of Diggs in the backfield, who obviously knows the game so well. And yeah, I thought he was great. And if that can be your tandem going through, then you might have, you know, more than half a chance to make something happen in the next couple of weeks, because they look pretty solid at not giving anything up over the top.
Yeah, which is, I mean, the two biggest players were PIs on Trey Flowers. But yeah, the Seahawks arrive, Adam. Anyone to push praise on or mention more thoroughly than we have so far after Sunday?
Anyone to praise specifically? Well, I don't think he did necessarily much in the game on the whole, but it was nice that Jaron Reed was able to make a big play at the end to help Isaac with Clowney, because we did mention that he hasn't been impacting the game as much as you would have hoped recently, so that was nice to see. Offensively, I think it's worth mentioning, like, we've been quite big Ifedi supporters. The false start's getting a bit frustrating for me now. But again, that is what it is. I thought Hollister did a nice job when he was called upon. It still is amazing to me how much he's used, given kind of what his stock was coming in. But fair play to him for that. And it was just like a good, solid team win that was as Seahawky as it gets for me.
Yeah, all the close wins the Seahawks have had this year, the 8-point win on Sunday was the biggest win of wildcard weekend in the NFL, which is wild for a whole heap of reasons, really. Because, I mean, as we said, there were some weird happenings in the other three games, and then the Seahawks kind of just serenely moved on. It's also obviously the first time the Seahawks have won eight games on the road in one season. I think only two of the teams have done it, the Steelers and the Giants, in the last 15 years, and both of those teams went on to win the Super Bowl in February, which is, just keep that there for the next couple of days at least. But, I mean, before we got into the Packers, with what else happened, especially in the other NFC game earlier on Sunday, that door, Adam, is slightly more ajar than it was at 5 o'clock on Sunday evening, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Sunday night is going to be exciting regardless, but can you imagine if the Vikings beat the 49ers and there's the potential of a home NFC Championship game? I mean, that would be fucking wild going into Sunday night.
Saturday night at the Niners.
They're Saturday night, yeah, because I'm working on Saturday night, and I was thinking, shit, I'm going to miss half the game. And then the Vikings came up trumps and did me a solid, so nicely done to them.
I mean, that was an incredible defensive performance. I mean, Michael Thomas was nowhere, Kamara didn't do much, and Drew Brees looked like a 40-odd-year-old quarterback should look, shouldn't he?
Yeah, well, we can probably discuss it in our more general stuff later on, but it's worth wondering, like, are the Saints going to just, like, do this again with Brees and Peyton and everyone? Like, do they just go back and try the same thing that hasn't really worked that well for the last few years in terms of what they thought they'd be? Like, do they do it again?
Yeah, I can't imagine them not, really, but I mean there are some interesting quarterbacks in this class who could be
Taysom to the end of the season.
Oh yeah. That's just strange. But anyway, moving on to the Seahawks, as Adam says, play the last game on divisional weekend as well. After playing the last game on wildcard weekend, they head to the frozen tundra of Green Bay, Wisconsin. So yeah, playing the Green Bay Packers is always fun, especially with this broom in charge of Pete Carroll, John Schneider, Russell Wilson, the quarterback, because there's been some fun happenings in games against this team in this Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson era.
As Wilson scrambles to keep it alive, the game's final play is a Wilson lob to the end zone, which is fought for by Tate with Jennings simultaneous. Who has it? Who do they give it to? Touchdown! One guy goes up, touchdown. The other said no time. Has to be looked at. This is deciding who wins the game on this call.
Further ado, the call on the field stands. Touchdown.
Seahawks win in the most bizarre finish you'll ever see.
I'd give all this up for a chance at it. You would have thought I'd be the man for this. But the funny thing is, we can never stay here. I didn't think the state would happen. I'm gonna ride it till it's over.
Gotta like what he's seen so far. Wilson passes, picked off. That's Burnett, and he will slide down.
I'm gonna ride it till it's over.
From the one, it's third and goal. Here's Wilson keeping it for the touchdown.
I'm gonna ride it till it's over. Till it's over.
Here's Lynch. Lynch! Marshawn Lynch! Beast mode! Touchdown! Wilson out to his right. In big trouble. Up for grabs. And now it's all going to come down to Mason Crosby. Good snap, good hold. Crosby is good. And this game is tied.
I'm about it till it's over.
Wilson, Baldwin, what a throw! Inside the 40.
I'ma ride it till it's over.
Wilson toward the end zone. It is caught. Seattle's going to the Super Bowl. Jermaine Curse.
I'm a bad.
Yeah, Adam, the Fail Mary and obviously the championship game in 2014. First, the Fail Mary, that was, I mean, that's a it was a touchdown, wasn't it? It wasn't like, it was a touchdown. Golden Tate had the best walk-off touchdown in NFL history, didn't he?
I mean, I still can't work it out. And ultimately, I just don't care because exactly. If you look at the scorebook, it was a touchdown, ergo, yeah. Adios.
Yeah, the Coventry City manager said earlier when we drew 0-0 against kids at Bolton, if you look back in the Rothmans yearbook in a few years, it would just say 0-0. It won't say the circumstances of which, and that's exactly what that Fail Mary game is. Also, obviously, the other one was the NFC title game 4 or 5 years ago. 16-0 down with 4.5 minutes left, and obviously everyone knows, listening to this, the Seahawks came back and won in overtime. And what are your memories of that NFC title game 4 years ago?
My memories of that, I'm trying to think, it was 2004, was it 2015 that happened?
Yeah. 2014 season, but January 2015.
So I was just about to move into my first, like a flat with that I bought with my sister, I think, and I'd moved out of where I was staying. So I was at home watching the game on Sky, because we were the first of the two games that year. And my parents were watching with me. Like, my dad has a passing interest in the game. My mum doesn't really care, apart from the fact that her sister lives in Seattle, so always kind of looks out for the results or whatever. And I think they were watching this game thinking, like, is this what every game is like? Because this is insane. And I'd gone into full meltdown mode on a number of occasions, both happy and sad. So, yeah, I think it was as wild a celebration. I think I nearly passed out when Lynch scored the touchdown. Actually, that was my biggest celebration of the whole thing, because we were from losing, we were winning the game, which just seems so unlikely. Like, the cursed touchdown at the end. Once we got the ball back from the coin toss and Baldwin made the great catch on third down to set that curse throw up, I was kind of never in doubt we were going to win. Like, I always had the belief in it. So I think when Lynch scored, it was just carnage on my end. it was amazing. And I love beating the Packers, because they are the most self-righteous bastards. Like, they've got that Liverpool-y, holier-than-thou, we support a different style of team to the rest of you, like Liverpool and Barcelona kind of arrogance. So beating them is always magnificent.
Yeah, that's going to go down well in certain parts of our listenership. But I think I said to Mike Gugar when he wrote that thing on us in London last year, that I went around my mates, because my mate is a New England Patriots fan. They were playing the Colts later, which that game is the
late game, isn't it?
Yeah. But I went around there to watch our game, then I'll watch your game. And then at halftime, I was literally threatening to walk out. I was like, I'll watch the rest of them. I can't sit here, watch this, carry on, and then watch you serenely move on by the Colts in Foxborough. But then, obviously, I think our work is 5 years ago. So our work is 7-year-old lad up, his 2-year-old daughter up, when Jermaine Kearse caught that overtime touchdown. I think I leapt from one sofa over to his, just screaming to high heaven, which I don't think his wife has forgiven me for that 5 years later, but there might be other things in that as well. It was unbelievable. But like, I think Bob Condotta put on Twitter, like, of all the nonsense that happened that day, obviously, the John Ryan throwing the touchdown pass to Gary Gilliam, but you also, like, the stupidest one is, Clinton Dix should have iced that game himself, because the 2-point conversion to Luke Wilson, the ball went directly up in the air. It was like a penalty I saw in the JPT game earlier this season. It went directly up in the air, and Clinton Dix somehow managed to jump under it, and Luke Wilson just kind of stumbled in to the end zone. Of all the nonsense of nonsense, that kind of took the biscuit, didn't it?
I think Uri Geller was there above the stadium, because it kind of moved at the last second, a bit like Gary McAllister's penalty in Euro 96. Like, if you watch it coming down, I think even Luke Wilson said it himself, like, it ended up in a completely different trajectory to where it looked like it was going to go. Now, whether that means that Wilson was in completely the wrong place to catch it and he got lucky with the movement, I don't know. But it did. Yeah, there was some sort of divine intervention going on that day. But you had Michael Bennett riding the bicycle around the stadium. I always love it. One of my favorite things about winning the championships is when Wilson forgets to take his pads off before he puts the T-shirts on over the top. And so he looks completely ridiculous, like a robot man. It was just insane that day. And you had, I think Doug Baldwin, there was a turnover. Then they kick the field goal and we're like, all right, fine, we'll be all right. And then Baldwin's running a kickoff back for some reason and he fumbles. So there's like 2 turnovers in 2 minutes.
Yeah, it was not pretty. And obviously, there's also the Morgan Burnett, when he picked off Wilson for his 4th interception of the day and he just takes a knee. That was the Vikings beating the Saints door opener, wasn't it? And obviously, we still didn't expect what happened to happen, but that was after. It was just, an absolute brain fart. And then obviously Brandon Bostic muffing it. Chris Matthews, remember him? It was ridiculous. And we posted on Facebook for you guys to send in what you remember from it. Craig Harvey said the fake field goal that got us rolling. Sean Wilson, who, by the way, Adam, I don't know if you realise, him and Andy Robertson were at the game.
Is that right?
I don't know if you realise that.
Oh, I had no idea.
But as Sean says, Gilliam's TD's catch was so wild, the sky is right in front of us, the noise after the Lynch touchdown, the Wilson 2-pointer, and the onside kick, and then cursed the ground shook like I've never experienced. Al Scott watched it with Dan Ellis, two of our Welsh guys in the group down there in Cardiff. They said the two of us were running around screaming a pretty empty walkabout. Tom Harris says he cheered the curse catch so loudly that his neighbours called the police, which there's deeper questions before that, but never mind. John Randall says in the Willoughby with Nigel Brown, and Nigel kept repeatedly saying on the way home, did that just happen? Dan Cohen said he missed almost the entire game and was flying from the UK to US for work. He landed at the end of quarter three, checked the score, didn't check the score again, got a notification about OT and watched it on his iPhone 5. Don't know why that's important, but he added it, using their Wi-Fi and ignored whatever instructions his new bosses gave him. Mark Woodcock says, catalyst for it was John Ryan to Gary Gilliam touchdown. Jordan Ford said he's not sure if it's the right game, but he was in Dublin, but spent the night and was absolutely smashed, basically, in a bar called Copperface Jack's. When we got in, all amongst all the trashy dance pop music and disco lights, they had the Seahawks-Packers game on multiple screens. Piss as a fart, he says. He proceeded to dance the whole night while witnessing a glorious victory. I have to admit, a lot of the details are quite hazy.
Fair enough. It says a lot about how big a night this must have been for Jordan, that he obviously can't even remember what date he was in Dublin. Because you could very easily just go back and check which game it was by working out when you were there. So, you know, that's a heck of a session, Jordan. And yeah, you love to see that.
And then Nick says, down 16-0 at the half, my Raiders mate calls him up and says, Nick, change sports bar. So he did, walked a couple of miles in the freezing cold to watch the rest of the game in a, where his mate was at a different bar. Yeah, there was kind of that kind of change jerseys, change the seats, change the channel kind of feel to that weird when things like that are happening. There's so many stories of people saying they did this and that, and it kind of changed the look, that kind of like change of trajectory. It's kind of weird how humans act in those situations, isn't it, Adam?
You have to change everything when things aren't going well. I think I changed my jersey at halftime, actually, of that game, because you have to change the energy somehow.
Yeah, it's very strange. Momentum, maybe. Momentum. Sorry, I had to say it like Joe Tessitore. 2019 Packers item. They still have Aaron Rodgers at quarterback. 36 years old, Aaron Rodgers now. They're like the most underwhelming number two seed in recent memory, really, aren't they? Because they didn't seem to do anything. All of a sudden, week 15, they're 13-2, or whatever they were. It was a strange season for the 2019 Packers, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we probably can't speak too much to that, given that I don't know how we win
games. That's a very good point.
And somehow we've won like 12 this season already.
That's a very good point.
But yeah, they don't seem to be as, you know, when you think about the Packers of old, you know, you're thinking, you know,
what's great.
Yeah, like swashbuckling and 40 points a game and Rodgers just slinging it all over the yard. But that's not really happening right now. You know, it's Za'Darius Smith. Kevin King's got the most interceptions, I think, of any cornerback in the NFL this season. They're just winning like through, from what the untrained eye can say, like just extremely good fundamentals. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing going into Lambeau on Sunday, to be honest, for us.
Yeah, I mean, he's got another 4,000-yard season. Devontae Adams was 3 yards shy of a 1,000-yard season, despite missing about 5 or 6 weeks and almost derailing my big at fantasy team. But Devontae is Devontae, and he come back and come back strong as well. But yeah, they don't. It's not that. I mean, back in the day, back in 2014-15, it was Randall Cobb. It was who was the tight end? Jermichael Finley, Jordy Nelson. It's kind of like get you from all sides, but now it just kind of seems that it's on what Aaron Rodgers' playmaking ability with his arm, just some of his. I mean, we talk about Russell Wilson's like arm strength on the position he was throwing the ball from, but some of the throws that Rodgers was throwing the ball a couple weeks ago against the Vikings were just insane. But this Packers team with a first year head coach, obviously, it really seems to live and die by what Aaron Jones does at running back. The 1,100 yards, 16 touchdowns on the ground and 3 in the air for him. Over 1,500 yards all-purpose on the season with Aaron Jones. But it's somewhat of a nightmare situation for the Seahawks. Our questions surround this, the 2019 Seahawks run defense. Aaron Jones is going to test that, like a few running backs left on the NFC side are going to, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, if ever you could do with a Bobby Wagner renaissance game, it's Sunday. Because Jones has been exceptional. I think he would unquestionably be their offensive team MVP. And he's going to need watching. Extremely, you know, almost spied, I guess, with the danger he could potentially do. So that's going to be a problem. Obviously, Devontae Adams a problem. Is it Alan Lazard? Or Aaron Lazard? One of them, one of the Lazards, is going to be a problem because he's been playing pretty well. And annoyingly, you never know when Rodgers might just find his day. So, yeah, it's going to be fucking stressful.
Yeah, well, I'm not looking forward to this. And snow seems ever increasingly likely, but it is slightly wild. But, I mean, we spoke last week about an offense which didn't get the ball to anyone over 500 yards. This offense gets the ball to everyone to 400 yards. Marquez Valdes-Scantlin, Alan Lazard, Devante Adams, Jimmy Graham, and Aaron Jones all have apart from Jimmy Graham, all of them have over 450 yards receiving, and all of them seem to find, all of them have three or more touchdowns as well. This is there's going to be a guy we could probably talk about for 20 minutes, and it'd be his like the fifth choice wide receiver getting the game winner. Because I think last year was it someone called Robert Tonyan got the long touchdown, but is that last year by the Packers in Seattle? I think it was. That sounds right.
The Color Rush game, I think, wasn't it?
That's the one. But also another thing, we're going to Green Bay, so we talked earlier about 2015, we beat them the start of that season as well as in the championship banner unveiling season opener in week one that season. But we haven't won, Adam, in Green Bay for 20 years. The last couple of trips have been unrelenting beatdowns. Russell Wilson threw 5 interceptions a couple of years ago. It's not an easy place to go, but it's also a place that it's not been too kind. I mean, if of all the road stops, it could be the one last remaining outpost, couldn't it, for this team to bring down, kind of thing.
This would be a real statement. I mean, it's going to be very nice going in there and not seeing Mike Daniels for the first time, who is normally the absolute wrecking ball that destroys us. He moved, didn't he, Mike Daniels?
Yeah, I'm just looking. It's the first time I've heard that name all season.
I think he moved to Detroit and isn't really doing much.
Got injured.
So you got no Mike Daniels, you got no Clay Matthews, the uber twat. So that's quite nice that he won't be there to annoy everyone as he always does. So it does feel like you're playing the Packers, but it feels like, apart from the quarterback, just an extremely different experience to everything you've experienced in the past. You know, certainly this group of players going into Lambeau.
Yeah, and this team, along with the Seahawks combined, I think it's for 13 or maybe 14 one-score wins in 2019. So they're like the Seahawks, they are battle-tested and weary of all that as well. So it's going to be, they are going to be a tough out, and they are probably going to hang around and linger on the scoreboard just as much as the Seahawks have in numerous games this year. Defensively for the Packers, it's, we said they're get at-able, but Kevin King, Jair Alexander, Adrian Amos is a pretty nice secondary, but also the headline makers are the two of the Smith brothers up front, Zadarius and Preston. And we come in big money, which is very unlike the Packers' last free agency. And they've come in, and especially Zadarius, both of them combined for need 26 sacks and all of the tackles, 60 quarterback hits by the two of them as well. We talked about DK Metcalf having a following up his breakout in Philly. Those two guys we talked about on the left side of the line, in particular, if they both have to play on Sunday, they're going to have to do that. And then some. Also, our pal on the right side as well. This is the Packers' offense of 5 years. Is now their defensive line. It comes from all angles and all levels, isn't it?
Yeah, they just seem a lot better coached this year, especially on defense, than they have been in the last couple of years. I just... In a way, you'd probably rather go there than San Francisco, and you'd rather go there than New Orleans, despite the fact that obviously they didn't have a good result on Sunday. But I don't know. I'm just not looking forward to this at all, because it's just going to be an uncomfortable experience the whole way through, I feel.
Yeah, I wanted to say it was Jack Preston Smith when he come out of college like 5 years ago, and he just has not. I mean, this is his proper. I mean, he got paid without really having a star spangled season for the Redskins, but he's just been 12 sacks, 56 tackles, 23 quarterback hits. He started every game. On the defensive side, they look like they've stayed relatively remarkably healthy, which is exactly the opposite of what we have gone through and also what we faced in Philly last weekend. So this is just a completely different proposition. But the Seahawks have shown that they can win on the road in tough situations against tough opponents like this. So if they, as you said, if they do it again on Sunday, I don't, then oof. It's I mean,
then it's serious.
Yeah, then it's on, as they say. Confidence prediction, one to watch on each side of the ball for the Seahawks.
Confidence. I'm going to say confident because it is a Seahawk game, and it's too big a game to be predicting a defeat. So I'm going to go 27-23 Seattle.
Okay.
I wouldn't say that I'm, you know, absolutely certain that that is the way it's going to happen, but let's be positive for the listeners that are hoping to that we can give up some pearls to cling on to look forward to for Sunday night. One to watch, well, let's stick with the big man DK again, because if he can play in the same way as he did on Sunday, or even I think he's got 241 yards and two touchdowns over the last two games, so let's split that as an average and give me 120 and a touchdown. And then that'll be quite delightful.
Nice. Like it. I think, I don't know why, but I'm quietly confident about Sunday. I think the Seahawks, with the people they've got back at the defensive side of the board, also, it seems like Dwayne Brown could be back as well, which would be a massive boost to the O-line against the Smith brothers as well. But, I think the Seahawks could put up 30 against this team. Obviously, weather dependent could be a massive thing. But this defense seems set up for the Seahawks to have issues against. Yes, but it also just seems set up perfectly against how the Seahawks have found, especially last week in Philly, how they found success, obviously the deep ball and getting the ball out to our shifty and mammoth receivers. In equal measure, I think 31-23 is what I'm going to go for. 24 for the Seahawks. I think they're going to win. I messaged James. We've got a Super Bowl meet in Birmingham on Super Bowl night, and I text James, who's basically organising it. I'm just kind of saying, yeah, cool. And I said to him, it could be interesting. That Vikings win is just like it's broke everyone's like playoff challenge brackets. I think it's just properly, if that can happen, then the Seahawks can easily go into Green Bay and handle their business, because there's like a group. I mean, the sound effects, I think we said a few weeks ago, there's that unnamed NFC rival talking about how Russell Wilson's a killer. If you listen to his sound effects from Turning Point Inside the NFL, what it was on Showtime, he sounds different in when he's winning games this year. There's a thing, goes he's like shouting game, set, match after that DK Metcalf catch. That's like, it's usually just walk off the field and hoot and holler, repeat Carol and go home kind of thing. He does seem like a different animal this year somewhat, which is encouraging and exciting. Yeah, I think the Seahawks will win on Sunday. If they do, then the NFC title game against the 49ers or the Vikings will be the late game the following Sunday night. Adam, where are you watching that from, Adam?
35,000 feet. I'm going to be on a flight to Sri Lanka at the time. And I have no idea. I think, having done some preliminary research, that there is Wi-Fi on Sri Lanka Air, so I could really be ruining the flight for absolutely everyone. If that And yeah, Rosie, it'd be a delightful start to the honeymoon for Rosie to have to experience watching, sitting next to me on the, she was so happy. She's like, oh, we've got, just the two of us are in a row together. It's like, oh yeah, you laugh now. Just wait till the Seahawks are playing that night. You'd be wishing on the other side of the plane, my dear. Sorry about that.
It is mad. Like, I mean, every country has their own airline. I mean, apparently the New Zealand Air never knew that until playing Trouble Pursuit over Christmas. But yeah, that would be, I mean, that'd be like one of those, like, was it Delta United viral videos from a few years ago where they're dragging the guy off the plane by his arms up at 30,000 feet to stop off in, I don't know, Eastern Europe somewhere. If obviously Seahawks do win, then this is just the most ridiculous season. Well, if we do, we will try and pod before all that occurs next.
Don't worry, we'll pod.
Getting them, Adam?
Absolutely.
First of all, this is an exciting time for our organization.
2017 Browns joined the 2008 Lions as the only teams to go 0-16.
Get in the bin.
Give me Josh Freeman, who was the 17th pick in the first round, over Cam Newton, who was the number one overall pick.
And the 2015 AP Most Valuable Player is Cam Newton.
Get in the bin.
Chip Kelly's an evolver, and he's a smart guy, and I think he's going to go to San Francisco and they're going to be a much more viable football franchise.
That the 49ers are expected to clean house and dismiss head coach Chip Kelly.
Get in the bin.
So before we throw it to myself, Adam, we did ask with that 2015 memories thing to get in a few, get in the bins. Mark and Ryan sent in. Ryan said, he said what we've said a few weeks, Al Riveron can get back in if he, again, missed PIs, calls not being reviewed. It needs to be canned into the season. That's pretty much scripture at this point, isn't it, Adam?
Yes, 100%. I think if they're not going to use the rule that they specifically set up, on Sunday for the Carl Rudolph thing, just odd. I mean, I didn't think it was definitely PI, and it is hilarious that it happens to the Saints again. But it, a little bit iffy. But my issue with all of these games is, why does the on-field decision carry so much weight? I just don't understand. You've got one guy watching it at head height at a million miles an hour, or you can watch it in slower motion from eight different screens. Why would you give priority to the decision that the guy on the field has made in that? It doesn't make any sense. Same in football, like soccer football. Why is it so hard to overturn a call? It should just be seen as the ref made a decision. Fine. Was it right? Yes or no? It doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah.
And actually the biggest one for that was Dalvin Cook scored a touchdown against the Saints, a rushing touchdown. That was iffy at best, I would say. But they obviously gave it as a touchdown so they can review it, because they can't review a non-touchdown. But then you've got Mike Pereira saying, or whoever the guy in the booth was, the referees and analysts saying, well, then, there's not enough to overturn the decision on the field. So, but that's ridiculous, because you've only given the touchdown so you can have a look at it. So something's not right there for me.
Yeah, there is too much room for error kind of thing, isn't it? But that Dalvin Cook one was dumb. Mark Wilcott says the Browns can get in the bin for getting rid of John Dorsey after only 2 years. The only mistake he made was appointing Freddie Kitchens. Otherwise, the Browns have a talented squad that hasn't gelled yet. I think that's why the Browns fired John Dorsey, because he made a horrendous error in hiring Freddie Kitchens. He was not fit for more than any job he had. He just got pally with a quarterback and no idea what he was doing above that. I think he was way me off. I can't remember another NFL coach being so far out of his depth, Adam.
Did you see the video that surfaced from last year of Freddie Kitchens going over to Baker Mayfield on the sideline? He like tickled him under his chin, and Mayfield just sits there and goes, "That guy is such an idiot." And then he became the head coach of the Browns soon after. It's a very funny little moment. But yeah, I think unfortunately Dorsey carried the can for making that decision, because it was entirely his hire and he fucked it to epic proportions.
Also at the same point, I think the one thing that should be, the one aspect of the Browns which should be binned figuratively in this bit and also in real life is the owners, because they're awful. they seem like absolute wretches as people, but also they are Jerry Jones without like the 90s, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But yeah, Adam, get in the bin.
Well, speaking of Jerry Jones, and how the Cowboys and the Giants have gone about hiring their coaches, there is the Rooney Rule in place whereby a minority candidate has to be interviewed. But, I mean, this is being flaunted to an absurd level now. I mean, Marvin Lewis interviewed for the Cowboys job. Can you imagine any scenario where Marvin Lewis gets the Cowboys job? That was quite clearly just a Rooney Rule step to do that. And it just seems incredibly unfair on so many minorities that they're just not even considered for these roles now. I think Stephen A. Smith went crazy about it, rightly, on his show yesterday. And I don't know what the solution is, because, you know, these teams ultimately are a law unto themselves.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I found it quite disheartening that, and I think people are right in their exasperation at what it's looking like at the minute. It doesn't seem very fair.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Joe Judge hiring in New York is the biggest thing, because everyone talks about the Bill Belichick coaching tree. We've talked about it, but it's not exactly been a wondrous success all around. I mean, Brian Flores turned it around and kind of seems to have Miami somewhat adjacent to the right track. Matt Patricia is just an absolute train wreck in Detroit and is pretty much probably keeping his job because Bill Belichick is still in his phone book. And then you got the special teams coach, which is it's a very un-Dave Gettleman and New York Giants hire. But Eric Bieniemy, is that how you say his name? The Chiefs OC has done unbelievable things with Patrick Mahomes. Imagine trying to scheme an offense around Patrick Mahomes, Tyreek Hill, the Shady McCoy, Travis Kelce, and all that. And the guy's done it, but also did it with Alex Smith for a smaller role alongside Andy Reid. The Andy Reid coaching tree is the one that should be plucked from more often than the Belichick one. And the fact that Bieniemy isn't seemingly anywhere close to getting the Browns job, which is the only one still around, is just weird and kind of proves the wider point. But also, I think someone pointed out last night on Twitter that all it will be now is that all these assistant coaches who have got like the years, the tread on the tires kind of thing, and have been successful in their pigeonhole jobs, they're now just going to go to the college game. I mean, look at the contract Matt Rule has signed with the Carolina Panthers from Baylor, and he's like $80 million all told for 6-7 years. That's insane amount of money. And the only reason they've spent that much money is because his contract at Baylor, it was so big to begin with that he had to have a pay rise to leave, kind of thing. It's not like when we plucked Pete Carroll from SC, which he was, it had to be the highest paid coach in the collegiate ranks, but the money has just skyrocketed when you got like Dabo Swinney doing everything. Nick Saban's kind of changed the game. So all these black assistant coaches are just going to go and find jobs at Power 5 schools and kind of earn their corn even more, kind of thing. But also kind of it's to the detriment of the league if like the Bieniemys and Jim Caldwell's and all that of the coaching ranks kind of go down to the college game and kind of just make their money, which is definitely what they should probably do. But like
Jim Caldwell versus Matt Patricia is the one, really, isn't it? I mean, Jim Caldwell was winning in Detroit and got canned. Patricia's had two disastrous years now in Detroit and isn't going to lose his job. And that's a color thing. I'm sorry, but it is.
Yeah, it is. But yeah, it just that's what's going to happen. That's what should happen. I mean, but Kellen Moore's been talked about with the Huskies OC job. It seems like he's going to stay in Dallas. But like, that's the perfect spot for a Bieniemy, for a Jim Caldwell to just go and just work. But they don't. It's not about enhancing their reputation in the college game. It's about just like proving their worth somewhat, which they shouldn't even have to do, because look at that Chiefs offense, man.
Yeah,
it's all you have to do. It's not hard. I think you probably just took my get in the bin as well. I'm just going to go with the entire Cowboys shenanigan this weekend. I mean, Mike McCarthy, staying over at Jerry Jones's house is just a weird weird visual, really. But
imagine
it's just,
if it was Mick McCarthy, how weird that would be.
Oh man, that'd be brilliant.
Yeah,
that'd be like the weirdest Channel 4 wife swap ever. But yeah, and then also Jason Garrett. I mean, I introduced Adam saying he allowed me to record. What on earth was that? I mean, like, he's a great. It's embarrassing, isn't it? This is a billion-dollar industry, million dollars worth of decision making in a building, trusted with decision making, and they use the phrase Jason Garrett allowed us to do whatever it was. I mean, what is going on? I mean, it could happen with soccer, with Premier League and Solskjaer at this point. He's very Jason Garrett-y. Yeah. In a lot of ways, but it's just, what is that about? Jerry Jones is already in the bin, but Jason Garrett, man, come on, have some like self-worth or something.
Yeah, it was a little bit like clinging on to the girl that doesn't really like you anymore, but you're desperate to find a way to win her back over. Yeah, it was a bit unbecoming. I mean, I wonder if the verbiage used has kind of done Garrett no favours. But apparently... No, I mean, I don't know if I heard, but like that Garrett might have been in some of the interviews with McCarthy this weekend.
Or that's
in
weird.
The same area. It's just insane. What's going
that's
on?
So stupid. I'm also the first part of your sentence saying really hit a core. So, never mind. Yeah, more recently than I like to admit. But anyway, good week, bad week.
Let's do it. Good week. Kirk Cousins. Gotta be a good week for Kirky Boy, and to seal it with the "you like that" is just awesome.
Yeah, like, it is pretty cool.
He's obviously like a really corny figure, and I'm sure like all of the Vikings players are well aware that he's a bit of a corny kind of guy, but I don't know, like, he just seems like a really nice bloke, and he is ultimately completely true to himself, completely comfortable in his own skin. And if people like him, then he's happy with it. And if they don't, then whatever. And I just thought it was really cool that he dropped the "you like that" and everyone went crazy for him, because, yeah, it's nice when you see a nice guy get their moment. And yeah, I loved it. I thought it was great.
It was. He just kind of seemed like Eli Manning on steroids, kind of shucksiness, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. Good week. I could have said this every week. Deshaun Watson is just ridiculous amounts of fun to watch. That was very Seahawky of Russell Wilson-y, and how like they come out of absolutely nowhere to win that game, and it was the play at the end where the Bills players collided. And he's just an absolute playmaker. The fact that he's a lot of Seahawks fans that say Russell Wilson's put the Seahawks in position in spite of his coaching or coaches. Deshaun Watson's doing that on like a different level. Bill O'Brien they were 21-0 or whatever it was, 16-17-0 down in a wild card game at halftime for the second straight year. Last year it was against Colts. They didn't come back in that one. I think it was Colts. But yeah, he's one of the most fun players to watch in the league. And like we spoke about a few weeks ago, the year of the black quarterback, he's showing that incredibly, so it was ridiculous to watch. And also, obviously, another good week for Mike Vrabel, Adam, who,
yeah,
amazing, the best troll job of all NFL coaching troll jobs by using the false start, drains the clock on his former mentor in Bill Belichick, and Bill Belichick's, as expected, quiet and subdued, F-bomb-laden reaction, Adam.
It's in Twitter and social media and media parlance, you love to see it. And you did love to see that, because it was just very, very funny.
It was also obviously a wider sports thing. Another good week for Benjamin Stokes. I mean, that was a ridiculous hour of test cricket on a different sport.
I watched the whole day's play and then I had to go to a bloody meeting when there were six wickets down and missed the last four. So I think that's called Spursy, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah. Was it South Africa went 20 for 3 after Joss Butler called their batsman a knobhead? So,
great insult.
It was, it's an elite level swear word. Yeah, I think that's everything. If you want to get involved with the podcast,
I've got a bad week.
Okay, sorry. Go on then.
Now, you might disagree. I'm sure there's ratings that might will either back this or not back this, but I'm not sure if people don't all watch Monday Night Football because it's late on the East Coast and it's maybe time on the West Coast, but it's a bad week for Booger and Tessitore because they were getting slammed on social media for their watch, for their calling of the Bills Texans game. And I've never seen a commentary duo just get pounded by everyone on everything they said. You've got Booger calling for a draw and a spike on third down, which is just absurd because then you'd give the ball back. They were getting pounded by people, and it was almost like a lot of people had heard about how bad they were but never actually seen it, but this time everyone was watching to see how awful they were. And yeah, I mean, social media is often a great accompaniment to a good game of NFL football, and it certainly was on Saturday for a number of reasons, but that especially.
See, there's very few times when I'm not pleased and relieved to be in a bar, in a pub where the TV is on but there's no sound. But Saturday evening was one such a thing. I was watching the Bills-Texan game in complete silence apart from the conversation of the people I was with. It was a bliss. It was amazing. I was so happy to be not listening to them two for one more week. You texted me maybe early on Saturday and I was like, I'm in a pub. I don't care. It was brilliant. That's how all Monday Night games should be viewed, I think, if they keep up that job. Hire Amin and Hasselbeck. But yeah, the third, fourth down thing is ridiculous. I mean, that's like, it's comprehensive. Like, how, it's just, how is that guy, I mean, like, I don't really watch much of their college analysis shows, but apparently Booger was bad at that. So how has he gone from that, which is like 2 days a week on a Wednesday, 2 o'clock kind of thing, to the like linchpin of that entire network back in the day? It's insane and bizarre and hilarious.
Conversely, a great week for Sky Sports NFL getting Brian Baldinger for the weekend. Like, it's so good when they get people of that level over on the TV. It's like it makes the game so much more enjoyable to watch. I mean, obviously, guys like Neil and Sean do a good job, and Reinbold's always good. But when they get someone of that stature who can really educate, like I love watching them, and they're effusive and exciting, and they obviously love the game. It made a good week, it made a great weekend even better.
Yeah, and everyone who's complaining that the Seahawks don't get any positive media coverage, go and just scroll down Brian Baldinger's Twitter timeline on a Monday morning. It's always raving and hollering about our quarterback and how we get shit done. If you want to get involved with the podcast, you can on all usual means and methods. Please leave rate and review where you have not yet on Podbean, iTunes, and Spotify. Just search for the Pedestrian Podcast. If you want to get more, get in the bins. Appreciate everyone who replied with comments for their memories of 2015 championship game, and also Ryan and Mark yet again for their get in the bin nods and nominations. We do encourage that, and we do enjoy that, and do enjoy all the conversations or whatever, the content that can provide us. It makes our job easier because, well, we are quite lazy, aren't we, Adam?
Well, me especially, yes.
Yeah. If you want to get involved, please do that. Enjoy the game, whichever corner of the country, aisles, and world you watch it from. The Seahawks are getting ever closer to the most ridiculous and unlikely Super Bowl run in NFL history, and it's going to be fun if they can manage it. On to Green Bay, Adam, and this has been the Pedestrian Podcast.
Go Hawks.
DK was special tonight. I mean, he's been special all year. One of the best rookies that's come out, and he's got a nice little chip on his shoulder too, you know, and I'm glad he's on our team, that's for sure, and he's on our team for a long time.